Good evening, and welcome to Mondo Eros. My name is Stephen Otero, and I'm host for this evening. And I welcome you to this, our third broadcast on the brand new adult channel here on bbsradio.com. And I have a special treat for you all, and it's definitely a special treat for me. As my special guest tonight, I have a fellow host on bbsradio.com, Ms. Veronica Monet. Veronica, you there, darling?
I am. What a sweet introduction. Thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you. And I just want to, so everybody knows, that I was originally a guest on Veronica's show back on New Year's Eve.
Yes, because we both have such amazing social lives. You know, I live over here near San Francisco. You're in New York. What else would we be doing but doing a radio show?
Absolutely. And then it was said that I was going to have Veronica as my guest, and here we are tonight.
Here we are.
Yes, so get ready for an hour of intellectual stimulation.
You've been reading my book.
I've been reading everything about you, doll. I've been reading about you. I've been following your career for years now.
I feel quite honored, Stephen. I feel quite honored. Thank you.
And I love whenever I get to see you on television, whenever you do talk shows and stuff like that. It was always a thrill to watch you. And now that I know you and can talk to you, it's like, wow, it's even more.
Well, you know, there's another TV show coming up, by the way.
Oh, what's that?
This one's about domestic violence, and it's going to be airing in July on the Women's Entertainment Network.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. Not great to the topic so much, but great to the fact that you're on it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, but it's interesting because I actually work with couples on problem solving. I learned so much from both being unfortunately, a survivor of domestic violence and growing up in a home that had violence, but I'm also a trained volunteer for victims of domestic violence. Used to wear a pager and work for a domestic violence shelter up in Oregon. So, and I have found, you know, people don't like that term. They don't want to be identified with it, but, I mean, you know, like right now we're looking at what's happening with Rihanna and her, what's the name of her boyfriend, Chris Brown or something?
Chris Brown, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's actually, it affects a lot of people who you would not guess. And then there's all these, like, tertiary stages to it that most people don't even consider violence. Like, you know, what you would see on most reality TV shows nowadays, I consider that violence. So.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that violence, you know, there's going to be very released very soon. I don't know the exact release date. There's a film coming out called, it's a remake of The Last House on the Left.
Oh, yeah. That's the one where the daughter's raped and almost murdered.
Yes.
And is this a real story?
I don't know if they based it on an actual incident, but what's so confounding to me is when you go back to the original film, the original Last House on the Left,
yeah.
If you research it, the people who were behind that film originally came from the porno business.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of the performers, the actors in El Silver, are also people who had been in porn films. In fact, one of the bad guys was played by Fred J. Lincoln. Big time.
You know, I am not that much of a mainstream porn aficionado to know who that is.
Well, my point is that here's a film that started out as a porno movie, but they made the decision to go for graphic violence. And that made the film a big hit that gave the people behind the cameras an entry into mainstream cinema, gave them all Hollywood careers. Of course, the people who were the performers didn't really go very far because they were porno people, so they just, you know, they just stayed in that genre. But why is it
that's
so celebrated?
It's not a matter of choice.
Yeah.
They didn't stay in that genre out of choice. It's because there's such a taboo, such a stigma attached to having sex on camera that people don't want to let you gain entry. It's okay, however, if you're running the cameras that
yeah.
are filming people having sex.
Oh, yes. If you look at, again, a lot of people at that time period, the early 70s, who are now have Hollywood careers, most of them at that point, that was their only way to get behind the camera. That was the only way to get any kind of practical experience. It was guerrilla filmmaking, and it was how you learned your craft.
It's so funny, because I just found a colleague of mine. We used to host a couple of TV shows together. And anyway, he's a novelist. I just found him online, and he's making, like, these westerns where the women, they're the contrived scenarios that, you know, you and I watched when we were growing up as little kids, mm-hmm. where the girl always winds up naked.
Yeah.
And I think it's really funny because I know when he and I first knew each other, I was, you know, a working stiff for a computer company, and then a few years later we reconnected, and I think he had a little bit of a problem with my new career. And I'm like, okay, so now what's the difference between what I'm doing and what you're doing? Oh, yeah, that's right. You're the man behind the camera.
Yeah.
So it's okay. It's funny.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, it's such hypocrisy. But what really troubles me, I remember a long time ago, when Al Goldstein had his television show, and he used to do these rants, but one of the best rants he used to do was against the horror films versus porn films, and he showed all this graphic violence, and yet you can go see that in a theater, but show breasts, show a pussy, show cocks, show fucking, and you get the X rating. That's bad. But you can show someone cutting a breast off. That's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's fake, it's still, you know, it's still a very disturbing image.
Yeah, I don't understand. Well, so basically we're chimpanzees. That's
yeah.
really what's going on here. I say I don't understand. It makes me very sad. But the fact of the matter is that we're chimpanzees, and we could have been bonobos. We share just as much DNA with them. But we've really gone over into the chimpanzee camp, and it's sad, you know.
Yeah, because the bonobos have their own way of dealing with things, and they find a way to settle.
I don't know if this is reduction being, you know, if I'm being reductionist by saying this, but I actually think that it's as simple as you get to choose one of two paths. You either go down the road where you're, you know, just buried in sexual shame, and that is all about violence, or you're going to go down the road where you've got a very progressive attitude towards sexuality, and that can be a lot more peaceful.
Absolutely, and I think that's why things such as Tantra and sex magic have always been not just so much looked down upon, but actually persecuted. Because it leads you to a path of peace and also to a path of enlightenment.
Yeah.
I believe it can actually do that. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was also in the year 2009, there's still such a legal thing against sex work, whether you want to call it prostitution, escorting, or whatever. It just amazes me that, you know, and especially in the recession, the economic situations that we're in right now. Yeah, I know a way you could probably repair the economy. Just legalize everything and tax every ejaculation, you know. That'll solve the problem right there.
Now, what are you talking about, though? Every ejaculation of the pornos or people?
No, of the customers.
Oh.
That was just a sort of a joke.
Yeah, well, you know, California is actually thinking about legalizing marijuana, so.
Oh, yeah, that would do. Again, that they had a report on that on CNBC, too. They had a special report on that and how it's a huge industry. And, you know, it's just this puritanical culture that they're still trying to maintain this facade of it that keeps people in these straitjackets, but also is hurting the economy, because that could certainly pay off debt that way.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I just recently was speaking at Yale University,
mm-hmm.
and I introduced the idea of what is the difference between pornography and prostitution?
Mm-hmm.
Because, that is, there's like this real strict line between the two.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me because, mainstream talk shows will host some of the bigger porn names.
Yeah.
And they'll get, and that's okay. But I mean, it's kind of like if I would think about Dennis Hoff's Bunny Ranch, you got Air Force Amy. Those people probably are not going to be hosted as, celebrities on, talk shows, but I know that some of the bigger porn stars have been. It's almost as if, and the same thing, Ashley Dupre is not going to be hosted as a celebrity. She might be hosted again as this poor girl or this misguided girl, or, either prostitutes are bad people or they're misinformed people. So we either hate them or we want to rescue them, but we never treat them as just successful entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
What's the difference between porn and prostitution? Porn is people getting paid to have sex.
Right.
Prostitution is a person getting paid to have sex. Now, the only difference as far as I can see is that you interject a third party who pays both people who are having sex with each other in porn. And in prostitution, you've got one person paying another one for sex. But, if you say, the difference is the camera's rolling, that's not true, because lots of escorts will offer video as a upsell for their clients. So the client can book an appointment, and he can also get a video of it. So that's not it. And really, when it comes right down to it, we're just talking about who's making the money. So then it becomes a male-dominated, multi-billion-dollar industry is morally acceptable.
Right. I think because, at least that, from what I can gather, it's because, again, it is a big industry, and also because it approximates Hollywood. And I think that somewhat makes it more palatable for the mainstream people. They're not doing it in some hotel room, and it's not some young girl with this old guy, who's cheating on his wife and bringing something home to his wife and his children. They're doing it. It's a film. I may not like it, but I don't have to watch it. And I think that's probably, that was something that they fought a long, long time ago in California. I remember in the middle to late 80s, a lot of the porn people in California started coming to New York again to make movies. They were shooting on video then, because they were getting busted in California on these pandering charges. And eventually they won that. They were able to make the distinction, and they got it, the fact that you could make these movies legally in California. You had to have the same license that a regular movie company had. But once you did that, then they stopped busting people on sets.
Yes, right. And I understand, I think the religious right is always worried about their slippery slopes. Like they didn't want to let, the gay couple in Texas have a private sex life. Mm-hmm. Remember in Lawrence versus Texas, Supreme Court ruling, I think, came out in 2003. Because they're worried that, we may use a precedent like that to eventually legalize prostitution. And we will.
Well, here's something that I thought about, that I was thinking about tonight. I know many tantricas, duckinis, who transitioned from sex work, from escorting, into tantricas, into being tantricas and duckinis. If that calling of the tantrica could be fully recognized and fully legalized, then simply people who are doing escorting work could then make that transition into tantrika and dakini work, and there you would have it.
Yeah.
And I think that would be one way, because certainly in your career, you must have done, before you were doing coaching, when you were doing being the courtesan, you must have done healing work.
I've done, it's been healing work all along.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But I said a lot of that must have been just, you know, people say, well, why does a guy need to pay for it? Well, it's more than just sex. It's the conversation. It's the caring. That's a big part of it.
There are so many myths about the type of men who go to see escorts and exactly what is being bought when one is purchasing escorting services. But I took on a lot of those in my book, The Truth About, it was supposed to be The Truth About Men. It wound up being Sex Secrets of Escorts. But the truth about men.
Yes, which is what I'm looking at right now.
Huh?
You're looking at it right here.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, the idea that a man goes to see an escort because he's looking for some strange, you know, he wants something different than what he's got at home, that's silly, because the vast majority of the men who see prostitutes see the same ones over and over again for years and years and years.
Yes.
That's why we call them regulars.
Yes.
And they are the mainstay of the business. Almost everybody in the business has got a whole, you know, stable of regulars. And eventually, you know, if you get yourself established in the business, that's all you see. You very rarely see new people. So we're actually talking about long-term intimate relationships with a price tag attached to it, which is not that difficult for most men to conceptualize in their culture, because even wives and girlfriends have a price tag.
Absolutely, absolutely. And isn't that the reason why there's still this tension that comes from so-called straight culture, particularly the wives and the girlfriends, because they see so much of their own relationships mirrored in prostitution, and that's why they're so angry.
I couldn't agree more. I absolutely think that it is not that prostitution is eroding the family values, but that it's emulating them.
Yeah.
And I don't think that prostitution is antithetical to, mainstream culture. I think it's in competition with marriage.
Yeah.
And that's the real frightening thing for people. They're afraid that men will start to think, you know what, why do I need to support a wife and put up with, you know, probably not getting the kind of sex I want it when I could pay a prostitute. And women are afraid that men are going to think that too and then not marry them. I think the culture is also afraid that women will figure out they don't have to put up with men 24/7. You could just put up with them for a few hours, make the money, and go do your own thing.
Exactly. I think that's exactly what it is. It's like things are being driven further and further apart. I mean, I look at these different, in part of what I do, the work I do for Sexy Spirits and Mondo Eros, I'm constantly looking at these different dating sites and people's blogs on there. And the biggest thing is, who's going to pay for the date? When should you pay? How much
really?
Should you pay? You know.
Still a big deal. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's always about who's going to pay, how much should he pay, should I leave the tip, is he cheap if we go Dutch, about my independence, you know, it's like, the way I heard it described one time is, you know, when I'm on the job, I want to be treated like an equal. Afterwards, after work, I want to be treated like a lady, meaning you pay.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
I think that, if there's ever going to be true equality, then something has to give in that. Because it just, in a man's mind, it always, you know, he does it because he has to do it. It's like the coin of the realm. If you want this, you got to do that. You got to pay for that. But I think after a while, it goes into your subconscious. There is a resentment. Hey, she makes just as much. And I know the whole thing about know, 75 cents to a dollar and all that stuff. But still, it's like, why am I doing this? You know, where's the so-called equality here? Where is that here? It doesn't exist. And, you know, then why doesn't he just, you know, save up his money and maybe once a month or whatever, find a nice escort, find a courtesan relationship and do that, become a regular and get what he really wants.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I was married most of the time I was escorting, and I got divorced 4 years ago, and then I started dating. And it's interesting, after 13 years of marriage and 14 years of escorting, I just can't wrap my mind around why I should care about dating.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, now let's see. Let me get this. If the guy and I are going to go Dutch, we're going to split the, you know, the tab, and he's going to get sex out of it, and you know, okay, I'm getting sex too. But you know what? Usually for women, that's really not such a hard thing to do.
Right.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, however, you know, that equation falls down for you, it's just a fact of life, at least in the culture as it is today, and I think it could just be a fact of nature. The supply and demand is in favor of the woman. Usually, she can get as much sex as she wants, pretty much. And unless, you know, it's in an individual relationship, there's certainly women, and even in my own marriage, we had some problems with that, where my husband was on antidepressants and had less of a libido than I did. But, you know, those kind of individual fluctuations aside, I'm just talking about statistically, usually women feel like they kind of have sex on tap.
Yeah.
So, and I can't imagine why I want to go through all of this hassle for the dating thing. You know, I must go out as an escort, get paid to date, treated like a queen. Then you got the sex and the money and the fine restaurants and the beautiful hotels and the Broadway plays. And anyway, I guess I'm spoiled after professional dating. I don't really get what's in it for me to date unprofessionally.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's what? Politically incorrect. I've probably pissed off a lot of people, but
I'm glad you said that, and I think because you do come from the courtesan tradition, and so that's I think that's a completely different perspective, which I think is great, and I think that's just so fantastic.
Thank you.
And I think it's like that's a really good. Why should you? You know, and I guess, and that's also if guys who have money, why should they bother dating? You know, if they can pay, it's probably a lot easier for them. They don't have as much hassle.
You know, the whole idea of being married or. It is not lost on me. I have to say, getting the government involved in your finances is kind of a pain in the butt. But, you know, there's reasons for it. You know, sometimes financial reasons it can work out. But the concept of being monogamous or polyamorous, I really ascribe to all of them. I understand them. I'm not an either-or kind of gal. But and being in love, I love that. I mean, to me. But if I'm not in love with somebody, and I'm just killing time dating, I mean, you know what I mean? Like for something to do, I don't get it. So if you're not paying me, or I'm not in love with you, I really don't have time for this nonsense.
Right.
It's like, who cares? And I feel like the thing to do when I got divorced. So I certainly gave it a try, but. Very quickly found I lost interest. I'm sorry, Pandora's box has been opened, and I have seen the other side.
Yeah.
I've eaten of the tree of knowledge or whatever, you know?
Well, I remember, I think it was, you know, it's a quote that's been attributed to several people, but I think probably the most famous one is Charlie Sheen, who said, "I don't pay for them to come over, I pay for them to go away."
Yeah. And that's so cynical.
It is a very cynical one. But I remember there was, they had a video of him, I think it was on the E! Network, and it showed him, he was definitely wired when he did this interview, and it was quite well known that he was wired at the time. He says, "I got two girls upstairs dressed in cheerleaders' outfits. They're waiting for me. I can go up there and have them anytime I want to. That's why I do it."
So there's power.
I think that's power. It's power. It's especially for someone at that level. I mean,
can I just say something, though?
Yeah.
There's plenty of people at a better, at a more advanced level than that who would never have that kind of an attitude.
Right.
In other words, I'd like to have a little aside here. You talk about somebody like Elliot Spitzer, mayor of New York. He's going to the VIP, or what the hell they call that, the Emperor's Room?
Yes.
Okay.
Emperor's Club.
Yeah, the Emperor's Club. First of all, this is, you know, a website for guys who have small egos and even smaller dicks. this is not, you know, and if you are an independent provider, then you get to pick and choose the people that you're going to spend time with. And if you're asking me about, you know, healing, the healing modalities, you certainly cannot be practicing a sacred prostitution and moving into the realm of sex as a healing art and working with people who simply want to shit all over you, or, you know, treat you like a human toilet or a slave or something like that.
Absolutely.
Those people do exist, but they also exist in marriage, and I like to point that out to people and say, look, this is not peculiar to the sex industry. There's lots of wives out there whose husbands are treating them like dirt.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So, you know, there's men who want to treat women like dirt, period.
Absolutely.
And some of them get a wedding ring to do it, and some of them pay to do it. But that's not prostitution, and that's not escorting, any more than it defines marriage.
No.
So, you know, the clients that I saw were, in the beginning, I saw a lot of people that, you know, I would see them for an hour or two, and you could pretty well put up with just about any personality for an hour or two. When I started working, you know, hours, like 12-hour days with one client, and then I started doing 3 days in a row, so I would travel with the client, and became very, very selective about the type of people they spent time with. And the reason that I bring this up is you said at that level, well, by the time you start seeing people for 3 days in a row, and they're paying you, you know, $5,000 or $8,000 a day, and that was, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. Now, I think, you know, it's probably more like $10,000 or $20,000 a day. That level of individual far exceeds anything Elliot Spitzer or the guys that were going to the Emperor's Club could even conceptualize, because those people are just thinking about girls like pizza. They're thinking, I think I'll have a redhead tonight and a blonde tomorrow. And, I want to try this sexual position and that sexual position. And in my opinion, that may be expensive escorting, but it's low-end.
Yes.
High-end escorting is really for the man who understands that he wants to intellectual stimulation, you know, just like what you introduced at the beginning of this hour.
Yes.
Intellectual stimulation is for a man who has an intellect to stimulate, first of all. He has to have a brain and hopefully be a little bit introspective. Otherwise, it's of no value to him. And, you know, he may be interested in playing some power games, but vast majority of those men who have true power, who have so much power that everybody in their sphere is telling them what they want to hear, and they are never getting the no's. They're never getting anybody to disagree with them. That's the kind of guy who's going to seek a courtesan. He's going to seek somebody who will disagree with him. And, I had read about this in books, If you get the Book of Courtesans by Susan Griffith, you'll see there's actually a long tradition of high-end escorts getting paid to be contrary and intellectual. And that was never something that the wives were allowed to do. I like to say the wives, unfortunately, were expected to be dumb and docile. So they were not allowed to go to college, and they weren't allowed to write, and they weren't allowed to read. But the courtesans got to go to college, read, write their memoirs, accumulate wealth, and basically debate men publicly. And that's the tradition that prostitution really comes out of. And I really like to remind people of that, because whatever form it takes now, and however we have, you know, degraded it, this is the profession at its highest form. And it goes on today. And there are many, many modern-day courtesans who are selling that service. And the men who come to see them are not looking to have power over a woman or to treat a woman like dirt. What they are looking for is somebody who will give them a rest, a break, from being powerful, because they really, if you really have power, you want a day off.
it's taxing, it's stressful.
It is. And I finally got to experience that myself, because it's interesting, when I stopped escorting, I still have friends. I imagine I'll have some friends that I've known for a long time till I'm 80, you know, that's what am I going to do today? Sorry, I don't know you anymore. I don't think so. But so I went to this dominatrix in with a friend, and wink, wink. And she tied me up and blindfolded me and spanked me. And I got to tell you something. Surrender is delicious. It's absolutely delicious. And not in the context of somebody wanting to degrade you or have power over you. No, it's in the context of I am a very powerful person, and I've been in charge of so much stuff, and I've been tying people up and spanking them for years, and to finally get to switch that role and not have to do anything, it's just intoxicating.
Oh, yeah, I remember one night about a few years ago, I was helping a local tantrika do a demonstration of tantric spanking at a very well-known S&M club in Manhattan, and I went out on stage with her, and she spanked me, and she put up the tantric spanking, and it's like, whoa, I feel like I'm in my body. I'm not in my head. I'm actually in my body. It's like, you know, this really does feel good.
Yeah.
Especially done in that context.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing I think people don't get about BDSM. It's usually a lot more consensual, a lot more heavily negotiated, and a lot more respectful than most vanilla marriages.
Absolutely, and I think there's a lot that I observed going to what was called, club was called Paddles, that's still there, observed and seeing that, and it was completely different from all the stereotypes and all the myths that I had read about. In most of the cases of what I've seen in the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years that I've worked for Sexy Spirits, I've been to swing parties, I've been to polyamory groups, BDSM. All these people are very respectful, very knowledgeable, and extremely friendly and nice. I've never seen any kind of arrogance there. I can't say that when I worked in the straight world.
I know. I know exactly what you're saying. I really do. I've often thought, you know, it'd be just fabulous if people could get past their prejudices and we could have the people from the polyamorous and the BDSM communities teach monogamy.
Yeah.
Because even if it's not something that they practice, they could do it so much better.
Yes.
I mean, because, you know, it's all about honesty, disclosure, communication, negotiation, asserting boundaries, respecting boundaries. And these are not skills that most monogamous people have. What most monogamous people have are assumptions, prejudices, expectations, and disappointment, which usually leads to bitterness and anger.
Yeah,
and it's sad. It's sad because it's not necessary to live like that.
I think it's just, but, you know, I think that kind of honesty and integrity requires you to really look within yourself. I think a lot of people are afraid to do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing, isn't it? I mean,
and it's just easy to play a role.
Huh?
It's just easy to play a role.
Yeah.
And to do that. Because there's a lot of tremendous work involved in learning those kind of communication skills. That's the first thing I ever, whenever I went to any kind of polyamory group or meeting, or whenever we had people like Deborah Annapol come and speak at Sexy Spirits, that was always the emphasis, was the communication. And that was always the mantra, communicate, communicate, communicate. And that takes a lot. It takes a lot to do. It takes a lot to examine.
Yeah, it is. Most of the people that I know, BDSM is actually a high art form. I mean, you've really got to get a lot of education. And I just did my first blood sports last year, and it was actually very exciting. It's not really my personal cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
But learning to do it professionally was, oh my God, it was a rush.
Oh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've seen the preparations that go into it, because I'm very good friends with Stephen Spiliotis, who's the erotic bondage photographer. And the time he takes in, we call him the naughty knotter. And the time the intricacies of the knot work of that, of especially Japanese rope bondage, it's amazing. It's so intricate, and it's so the technique of learning it and doing it takes a lot of time. It's a discipline.
Yeah. No, it really does. And discipline being the defining term here.
Yes.
I think that most people think, oh, well, they're just going to go crazy, and God knows what they'll do.
Yeah, it's not that. It's a really it takes a lot of skill. It takes something to learn. Sure, anyone can pick up a whip and whack somebody, but that's nothing. I mean, you won't last very long. You won't have many people who want to play with you, and you'll probably get kicked out of the club or whatever. But it's just an amazing discipline. It's very similar in a way to what we do at Sexy Spirits. We just had the second level of the orgasmic providers class last night.
Yeah.
And it's a discipline that men have to learn, to be present, to be there for the woman, to please her, to serve her, to pleasure her, with no thought of, oh, when's it going to be my turn? You can't. No, you have to be there, present for her, so that she can surrender.
Yeah. Yes, you absolutely do.
And it's just amazing to see that kind of surrender going on, and just to observe, because I've observed it close hand, because we videotape the sessions and I'm the cameraman, but to see that kind of dedication and to see these guys come in. The guys who come in, the guys who go through all five levels of the course and who really learn it and who get it and see the transformation on them, and they're so respectful and they're so dedicated. And it's just an amazing thing. It's a whole transformation of consciousness that's involved in that.
Yeah. No. And that's the whole thing. I think that's one of the things that I'm trying to share with people is that two things. One, I think that our planet would be a much more peaceful, livable place if we were to heal ourselves of our sexual shame and move into an acceptance of all these different forms of sexuality. Not that we have to do them or embrace them, but that we need to accept diversity. It occurs in nature. Even prostitution occurs in nature. So the fact that we're hung up about things that are natural is, I think, sad. Now, it could be argued, well, you know, so is killing babies and violence natural, and that's true. However, the sex that we find in nature seems to lead to bonding and, you know, families and peace, a better frame of mind, you know, mental and emotional stability. And those sort of things, I think, are some of the things that most of us are looking for. So in that sense, I think it would behoove us to look at what is working elsewhere. And we don't really have a lot of examples of what's working for people. Pretty much everywhere we look, we just see a lot of patriarchal violence. So we've got very much an attitude of male dominance over females, and women, you know, females are not supposed to have sex for some reason. It might be that they're supposed to wait till they're married in the 50s. It might be that they're supposed to fall in love in the 80s. It might be that hooking up is okay in the 2000s, but, you know, we still have this whole idea that, but if you dare charge for it now, you are going to go to hell for that.
Yeah.
And it's, our society's not interested in putting men in jail for prostitution. Cops are far too homophobic to do that. They don't go out and bust the guys. That's why you can pick up a Bay Area reporter and see ad after ad after ad about the guy's cock size, whether it can be a blowjob or anal, whether he's going to be on top or the bottom, exactly how much he charges for the blowjob and how much he charges for anal. It's all there. You don't see any women's ads like that.
No.
Women's ads always say, no sex. Because the women are going to jail.
Yeah.
They're getting targeted. You know, and that's what we're really trying to do with these laws, is we're trying to control women's sexual behavior.
Yes, yes. It's always, I think that's always been, I think it's controlling behavior. I think it's just, you know, if you had this kind of freedom, you know, Reich always said that if you want to control someone, control their sexuality. And
oh,
I think
yeah.
that's what it's all about. I think it's that's why there's always been, you know, historically, you know, the old standby, it's the world's oldest profession. And they've been trying to control it since all the way back then. And I think that's part of the thing, is they don't want women to be powerful. They don't want them to be sexual. They don't want them to be conscious. They don't want them to be enlightened. And consequently, they don't want the average guy to have that. They don't want the average Joe to have that kind of access, to have that kind of ability, because then who's going to sweep the streets?
You know what? It's very, very sad, but it doesn't have to be that way. Even, now this is going to date me, but I know you'll remember the Palestinian Liberation Army, PLO.
Yes.
What was the leader, Yasser Arafat?
Yes.
They had, when they were trying to take off as an entity, they were trying to make a lot of I don't know, I guess they were trying to exercise that they had muscle. So they had this special military force that was kind of like the suicide bombers of today.
Right, Black September.
Exactly. The Black Septemberists were trained to kill.
Yes.
And they were killing machines, and they had no will to live.
Yes.
So at some point, Arafat's like, wow, okay, you know, I'm starting to make some headway with Kissinger and some of those people, and I need these Black Septemberists to cool it. But it was like he'd unleashed a monster, and he couldn't figure out how he's going to get these guys to stop killing, because
right.
that's all they wanted to do was kill. And so he figured out that he had to give them a reason to live. And what he did was he held an event, a social event, where he invited some of the young, unmarried girls from the community to a dance, basically, with the Septemberists, and told the women that it would be very patriotic if they would consider marrying these poor guys.
Yes.
So they did. They married them, and the men stopped killing.
Right.
And this is oftentimes, you know, I think this is one of the reasons we pick on really young men to send them off to the war, because they're still kind of buying into that whole dying for your country thing.
Yes.
And they don't necessarily have, you know, children and wives at home. A lot of them do, obviously. But anyway, it certainly worked for the PLO that they were able to get these guys to stop killing just by getting them laid and married and with kids.
Right. They did the same thing with the RRA guys. They got them more involved with family, and as they got involved with family, well, with the story with the Black September, the thing was they went, you know, and they said to the guys, okay, we'll give you, if you get married, we'll get you an apartment in Beirut, we'll pay you $5,000, and we'll get you a job. When you have your first kid, we'll give you another $5,000. Well, within, you know, within a year or so, they were all married, they all had babies. Then one by one, they bring these guys into the office. They give them a passport, and they say, we want you to go to France and do a job for us. And every single one of them said, oh, no, I'm married, I have babies now, no more. I don't want to do this, no more.
Wow.
That was it. That's how it was ended. That was
how
it stopped.
You
know, and that's, you know, it's so simple. You get these guys laid, get them laid regularly, make them family men. They're not going to want to go out and kill.
Yeah.
These guys do this because they're so hopped up, but also they're so incredibly frustrated that they can't have a woman, that life has no meaning for them. The only thing they can, you know, they're promised, you know, all these things will happen to them after they're dead and stuff like that. Well,
right.
this is a very old story, and it goes back to, it was called about 1,000 years ago, the old man of the mountain, his name was Abba Hassan. And he's accredited with the quote of, nothing is true, everything is permitted. He had a group of, a secret society of men called the Hassassins. This is where you get the term assassin from. They were all eaters of hashish. And the story goes is he brings two young guys in for recruits. They're given this special capsule laced with hashish. They're taken to this special garden, and all these beautiful women come out, belly dancers. They're dancing for them, and they eventually blow. They both guys get blown. As the pills wore off, they're taken back to see Abba Hassan, and they're told while the girls are performing, by his grace, you have entered heaven while still alive and in the body. And this could all be yours if you serve him. So the guys come out of it, and he goes to the first guy. What did you see? He says, oh, my Lord, I saw the grace of heaven. I love you, and I will serve you all my days of my life. He says, welcome to the order of the assassins. Go into the next door, go into the next room and meet your supervisor. This guy's going off to die. And he says, the second one, what did you see? And the guy said, I have seen the mysteries of the universe, and it was all within my own mind. And Abba Hassan smiled and said, welcome, brother, to the Illuminati. You get to go to upper management. You knew I was conning you.
That's funny.
And it's a con. It's one of the oldest tricks in the book. And you know, we do the same thing with our guys. We get our people hopped up with all this stuff, and dying is such a wonderful thing. He died for his country and stuff like that. What did he live? You know, I mean.
Yeah.
But it's all about power and control, manipulation.
Well, as long as we have wars, I certainly have respect for the soldiers that fight
them
for us, because, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't take my safe borders lightly.
No.
But I would like for us to stop rah-rah on the football game long enough, you know, to look at what can we do that would actually change this world so that we don't have to fight. I mean, you know, when the bonobos have competition issues with a neighboring tribe of bonobos, they either yell and scream at each other and run off to take it up another day, Or they just have an orgy, and then they share the food.
I think, you know, it could.
I'm not suggesting that we have to have orgies, but on the other hand, I am suggesting that what the hell's wrong with human beings that they're so enamored with their own, oh, we're so special. Human beings are, you know, pretty in love with themselves. We're the top of the food chain, and we are God's, the pinnacle of God's creation and all this stuff. And it's like, you know what? It's just not true.
Yeah.
It's just not true. There are other ways of doing things, and if we are going to allow something like how many hair follicles another creature has to get in our way of finding solutions to some of our biggest problems, then I think we win the booby prize of being the stupidest animal on this planet.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is. It's so, but it's all about, you know, it's money-making, and so much of war is about making money. There's like another great scene was in the third Godfather movie, which is the one that didn't make as much money, but I think this one told a lot of truths about how things are, and there was one scene with Andy Garcia. He's the young apprentice, Don, and he meets one of the old Sicilian guys, who's really, you know, a man. He says, Don Lucchese, you're a man of high finance and politics. These are things I do not understand. And he says, you understand guns? He says, finance is a gun. Politics is knowing when to pull the trigger.
Yeah. You have some good quotes there, Stephen.
Was I?
Yes, you have some good quotes.
Yeah, that's the actor in me, or at least the wannabe.
Oh, I didn't know you used to be an actor.
I tried. I didn't. I think my biggest thing was when I worked 5 days on the original Ghostbusters as an extra.
Oh my God, that's so much fun!
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was fun till I realized that the union guys were getting $250 a day. I was only getting $50 a day.
Yeah, yeah.
It was only my first film, so what the heck, you know. But it was interesting.
I did a little bit of extra work years and years ago, and they don't pay much.
No, I would never do extra work again unless I made union money. That's the only way I would do it. I did it for a few years, but I wasn't in the union, so it was mainly as favors to people and promises. Oh yeah, well, if you just do this one for us, we'll get you, and next time we'll give you a speaking part. Yeah, right. but I like what I'm doing now. This is great.
What do you do now?
Well, doing the work I do for Sexy Spirits, and I especially like what I'm doing right now, talking to you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And doing
I love this, too.
Yeah. And it's truly, I always was in love with radio and with the voice. I was always a big fan of the old-time radio shows.
You've got a good voice for radio.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, through the technology of the internet,
you also have a good
face
for television, by the way, for our listeners who don't know.
What's that?
I said you also have a good face for television for our listeners who don't know. Yeah.
Well, if there's anybody out there who wants to hire me, get in touch with BBS Radio. I'm available. <for them>.
Looking for a job, huh, Stephen?
Sure. Hey, a one-day gig is always great.
Yeah, I hear you.
But it's truly been a pleasure. I've been so blessed by what I've been doing the last several years. Is I've met so many interesting people who, you know, I was just a regular guy, you know, watching all these shows, and wow, that looks really interesting. But I'm really grateful because I know so many people, wonderful people like you. You know, it's like, you know, I used to watch you on television and say, oh, my gosh, she's so fabulous.
Well,
And now I get to talk to you.
And now we get to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I first told you that, you said, "You're not a stalker, are you?"
Oh, I'm sorry. I was probably just trying to tease you, although I've had a few stalkers.
Absolutely.
I have a few stalkers now. You know what they have a saying, keep your friends close and your enemies even closer.
Absolutely.
And I'm not always sure who's who, so I just keep everybody close.
Well, I think you are truly a goddess.
Oh, thank you. So
and, you know, and I'm so grateful that you do what you do, and that you write, and that you speak on these topics. And it's really important for people to get a different perspective and see what the truth is out there. And you are a truth teller.
Thank you.
And,
thank
and
you
I say so that deep from my heart, and also I love the dark hair.
Oh, you love the dark hair! Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah, you know what? No offense to Heather Locklear, but she's been a bleach blonde now for a long time.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because I was looking at pictures of her and I'm going, girlfriend, you got to get a new do. I mean, it's just a point where the bleach blonde thing, I think, starts to not work. Or in my case, I was having to use tons of product to try to make it work.
Yes.
And I try to let my hair talk to me, and it was saying, we've been a blonde for 10 years, and we need a break.
Yes. I think it looks really great. And,
thank you. I'm enjoying it. It's kind of interesting to watch how people respond differently, you know.
Yeah.
People have some attitudes and assumptions about blonde that they don't have with brunette. It's kind of interesting to see how kind of feel like I'm getting taken a little more seriously now, but it could just be all in my head.
Or on
your head. Knows.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being my guest tonight. It truly was an hour of intellectual stimulation.
And
I'm always available for you, darling. Anytime
what?
You want me to be on your show, I'm always available.
Oh, definitely. Probably have you on as a regular guest, like maybe every 6 weeks or something like that.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. We're all part of the family here.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank Veronica once again, and thank all the listeners out there for tuning in tonight. And we will return next week with another special guest on the brand new adult channel here on bbsradio.com. This is Mondo Eros. I'm Stephen Otero. Thank you for listening, and good evening.